The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, 2017 Family Business Awards. Across generations, these family businesses continue to color the Triangle's rich tapestry. And there are too many award winners for us to read all of them, so we'll read a sample, starting with Briggs Hardware. Location, Raleigh. Year founded, 1865. CEO owner, Evelyn Briggs Davis. Number of current employees, 3. How many generations have worked at your company? 6. Company description, hardware general store. What has been your biggest accomplishment in the past year as far as business goes? Briggs has partnered with the North Carolina Department of Agriculture and is now a member of their Got to Be NC program, selling unique food products from around the state. Briggs also has added Hershey's hand-scooped ice cream to its inventory. That was an immediate hit. There's no doubt Briggs will soon grow out of its current space and has its eyes on Fayetteville Street. How does the company contribute to the community? Over the decades, Briggs employees have served in churches and civic government, including a mayor of Raleigh, a city councilor, bank boards of directors, and presidents of numerous civic organizations. Most notably, Briggs Hardware donated toys to orphanages at Christmas and now continues to serve Raleigh's homeless population. Bordeaux Construction Company Incorporated. Location, Raleigh. Year founded, 1977. 2016 total revenue, $60 million. 2017 estimated revenue, $55 million. CEO owner, J. Blair Bordeaux. Number of current employees, 43. How many generations have worked at your company? 3. Company description, specializes in K-12, higher education, correctional, healthcare, and retail construction in North Carolina. What has been your biggest accomplishment in the past year as far as business goes? Everyone has heard the statistics that less than 40% of businesses survive to the second generation and 10% into the third generation. 2017 marks the completion of the first year as a third-generation family business. This is a testament to the collective effort put forth in planning, communicating effectively, and keeping the commitment to the culture and corporate values first in all things we do. How has the family business successfully linked the family and the business? We stand behind the name and reputation of Bordeaux Construction in everything we build. We build high-profile projects that are very visible in the community, with large impacts on the local economies where they are built. As a family business, we maintain an intense focus on quality, safety, and doing things the right way. What kind of succession planning process is in place at the company? Bordeaux Construction just successfully transitioned to third-generation ownership after nearly 8 years of succession planning and execution. How does the company contribute to the community? Bordeaux Construction is a proud sponsor of the North Carolina Sheriff's Association. We are firmly behind the local law enforcement community and the hard work they put into making our local communities a better place to live, work, and play. One of our favorite events is the annual sponsorship of the Evening with the Elves with Marble's Kids Museum. It is one of the coolest things to see the kids' faces light up there. We partner with North Carolina State University and East Carolina University with their respective construction engineering and construction management programs. We are also proud to be working as the construction manager for Wake Technical Community College and Durham Technical Community College, where we are developing apprenticeship programs that will tie the skilled trades program with the design and construction of projects on those respective campuses. Irregardless Cafe and Catering. Location, Raleigh. Year founded, 1975. 2016 total revenue, $3.4 million. 2017 estimated revenue, $3.6 million. CEO owner, J. Arthur Gordon. Number of current employees, 48. How many generations have worked at your company? 3. Company description, cafe and catering business. What has been your biggest accomplishment in the past year as far as the business goes? 2017 was the cafe's 43rd year of serving and the third year for Irregardless Catering at the Glenwood event venue. The Glenwood's 9 professionals coordinate all types of events, weddings, corporate, and celebrations, serving handcrafted meals using local produce, some from our own well-fed community garden. How has the family business successfully linked the family and the business? Irregardless Cafe and Catering was founded in 1975 and continuously operated by Arthur Gordon, a local son. He was born in Durham, studied at UNC Chapel Hill, and has his roots in Raleigh, where his mother was born. Arthur's family has been merchants in downtown Raleigh for over 100 years. His grandfather, Oscar Goodman, opened a jewelry store in 1912 at the corner of Wilmington and Harget Streets. After his death, Arthur's grandmother, Celia, and aunt, Alice Satisky, operated a ladies' dress shop there into the 1990s. What kind of succession planning process is in place at the company? The Irregardless Cafe is closely tied to its founder and owner, Arthur Gordon. Now that Irregardless also includes the well-fed community garden and the Glenwood event venue and catering, its managers have assumed responsibility for many of the day-to-day responsibilities. Gordon claims that there is no word for retirement in the Bible, and so he does not have any plans for succession. He is still a young man. How does the company contribute to the community? The Irregardless Cafe is blessed with a steady stream of organizations asking for meal and cooking class gift certificates, and it is the policy to give to all who ask at least a weekend brunch for two certificate, if not more. Joint Venture Jewelry. Location Cary, year founded 1998. CEO, owner, Donna and Lee Henkin. Number of current employees, 8. How many generations have worked at your company? 2. What has been your biggest accomplishment in the past year as far as business goes? Our goal for 2017 was to connect more to the wedding vendor community. We really accomplished this as we hosted a successful wedding vendor social and have been part of several stylized photo shoots supporting our community wedding vendor partners. How has the family business successfully linked the family and the business? The Henkin daughters, Jen and Carly, practically grew up in their parents' jewelry store. From a very young age, the girls learned valuable lessons on both business practices and how to keep the family dynamic steadfast in a working environment. What kind of succession planning process is in place at the company? The second generation of the Henkin family is already working at Joint Venture Jewelry, so the family has started the succession process. With technological advances and the popularity of online and social media influences in business, it's the newest generation that updates those aspects of the previously mom-and-pop shop. How does the company contribute to the community? The family business has contributed to several local charitable causes over the years through awareness, events, and financial donations to organizations such as Me Fine Foundation, Polka Dot Mama, Pretty in Pink Foundation, Carol's Kitchen, Interact, Big Brothers, Big Sisters of the Triangle, and more. Triangle Business Systems. Location Raleigh, year founded 2013. 2016 total revenue, $500,000. 2017 estimated revenue, $5 million. CEO, owner, Ryan Major. Number of current employees, 19. How many generations have worked at your company? 1. Company description, Xerox reseller with an emphasis on copier sales, leasing, and managed print services. What has been your biggest accomplishment in the past year as far as business goes? We gave friends and family who want to explore a new market the opportunity to work and live in Charlotte. We have always wanted to expand our business. Our new office in Charlotte was a major accomplishment. How has the family business successfully linked the family and the business? We employ family, friends, and family friends, each of which has a personal investment in our success as a company. On a fun note, we bring new meaning to Bring Your Kids to Work Day. Those days are frequent and bring a lot of joy and happiness to our office. Our family grows a little every time we hire a new employee. What kind of succession planning process is in place at the company? Our plan is to continue to employ our family, close friends, and community while servicing local businesses. We're continuing to build our infrastructure and plan to be in business for a long time. When the time comes, we hope the next generation in our family can continue to build the brand that their fathers, aunts, uncles, and cousins have created. How does the company contribute to the community? TBS has been a longtime supporter of local churches, schools, and sports leagues. Our local giving has exceeded $350,000 since our establishment in 2013. Versado Training. Location Durham. Year founded 2008. 2016 total revenue, $4 million. 2017 estimated revenue, $4.3 million. CEO owner, Josh Barrick-Low. Number of current employees, 20. How many generations have worked at your company? 1. Company description, training and employee development solutions. And what's been your biggest accomplishment in the past year? A successful transition in our business model from channel partners to a direct in-house sales department. How has the family business successfully linked the family and the business? Versado training is only one element of how business links our family. Previously to this company, all four Barrick-Low siblings worked for our father in a separate business called Dom Bakeries. Our father owned and operated this business for 35 years. Currently, all four siblings work closely together every day as part of Versado training, which we started in 2008. We also own, with our parents, a fitness gym and real estate holdings company. What kind of succession planning process is in place at the company? Succession planning for us has taken the form of diversification into branching business units, allowing each sibling a focus and to independently exercise their entrepreneurial spirit. How does the company contribute to the community? We started a 501c3 nonprofit foundation at the same time we started the company. A portion of all of our profits go to the Versado Foundation. Everyone in our organization, not just the owners or family members, is able to utilize the funds to have a philanthropic impact on their community. This has had an amazing multiplication effect on the impact we can have in the world around us. And we'll stop there as we move on in the Triangle Business Journal to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. The first headline, could this be Rocky Mount's last attempt to revive downtown? Like many towns in eastern North Carolina, Rocky Mount is looking for ways to jumpstart its local economy. And the town, once a tobacco hub, believes a new Rocky Mount event center will help when it opens in September. Our council had the foresight to invest in downtown and invest in the sports center, says John Gesso, downtown development manager for the city. The goal is for the 175,000 square foot space, which can hold 4,000 people on the floor, to be packed with basketball and volleyball tournaments and as well as boat and car shows and even corporate meetings. It's a very modern design and it can transform in different ways, says Gary Smallshaw of Sports Facilities Management, which is helping manage and market the facility. All dreams of economic sparks don't pay off, with the Music Theater in Roanoke Rapids being a prime example, and a report from the John Locke Foundation from a year ago referred to the Rocky Mount project, expected to cost $40 million as an unwise burden for taxpayers. But Rocky Mount officials see a chance to tap into the explosive growth of youth travel teams that has many cities scrambling for tournaments. In South Carolina, for example, Myrtle Beach has filled empty hotel rooms in the off-season with soccer tournaments. Rocky Mount isn't a traditional destination like the beach, but officials there believe its location at the intersection of two interstates, 95 and 64, gives it a chance to lure events. Gesso says the new facility, set to open in September, is already getting interest. We've had some struggles, but things are looking up, Gesso says of Rocky Mount's future. Our native children are starting to move back here. The question now is, will parents bring their sports-playing children as well? Renovated cigarette warehouse open for life sciences companies. The hallways and six-story atrium of the new Chesterfield in downtown Durham was abuzz December 5 with politicians, developers, and more than a few life sciences workers wearing lab goggles. The latter were there to work, while the rest showed up to celebrate the opening of the new 286,000-square-foot building, the product of a $128 million renovation. The Chesterfield is not yet full, but those who have moved in include Validic, Nutanix, and Biolab NC. The project was the first in the Triangle by Wexford Science and Technology, a Maryland-based developer. Our niche is we develop what we call knowledge communities that are anchored by either universities, health systems, or major research institutions, and then we surround them with entrepreneurial companies, says Justin Parker of Wexford. Parker is mum on future plans, but the company is seeking more projects here. Originally constructed in 1948, the Chesterfield served as a cigarette factory for a half century, but it has been vacant since 1999. holiday parties go lighter on alcohol. If you notice that the eggnog at the office holiday party doesn't have alcohol this year, there's a reason for that. Challenger Gray & Christmas, a consultant based in Chicago, surveyed 150 companies across the country and found that only 47.8% plan to serve alcohol at their holiday parties. That's down from 62% a year ago. The reason? The rising concerns about sexual harassment. Employers are currently very wary of creating an environment where inappropriate contact between employees could occur, said Andrew Challenger, vice president of Challenger Gray & Christmas. One way to create a safer environment is to limit the guest list, hold the party during the workday, and avoid serving alcohol. Overall, about 80% of companies plan holiday gatherings. $75 million goal looks near for Meredith. Colleges and universities can never have enough cash hanging around these days, and one that has been on a fundraising roll is Meredith College in Raleigh. Meredith started its Beyond Strong campaign back in July 2012 with a public announcement in February 2016. The goal was a whopping $75 million. The campaign has raised nearly $70 million towards that goal, and Meredith's endowment has reached $100 million. According to data from the National Association of College and University Business Officers, Meredith's endowment ranked number 458 nationally in 2015, trailing schools such as Duke University, UNC Chapel Hill, NC State University, and Wake Forest University, but ahead of Appalachian State University and UNC Wilmington. Rise of the Rest has Raleigh connection. AOL co-founder Steve Case is backing a new initiative aimed at funding entrepreneurs in cities such as Raleigh, and it has a local connection. Case's venture firm, Revolution, is teaming up with about three dozen of America's most respected entrepreneurs, investors, and families, according to the company. They're all funneling cash into a $150 million Rise of the Rest seed fund targeted to back startups outside of Silicon Valley. The idea was sparked by the book Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance that detailed the economic challenges of middle America. Investors in the new fund include Raleigh native Louis Bacon, now a billionaire investor in New York. Also involved are people such as Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos. The announcement, according to Revolution, is an expansion of the strategy that already brought Case to the Triangle as part of its biannual Rise of the Rest road trip program. It visited 33 metros, the Triangle included. The new seed fund is intended to expand that investment strategy by applying it at a larger scale and actively seeking out and investing in companies year-round, not just when Case's bus is in town. Big Screen is a big hit for the holidays. Biz Here's a Holiday Classic was a big hit recently at Raleigh's Rialto Theater. The theater shows classic films from time to time on off nights, and on December 4, it screened Will Ferrell's Elf. Biz Here's, the theater was packed, sold out, in fact, and the audience stood and sang Santa Claus is Coming to Town in the film's penultimate scene. Cool stuff, and the Rialto plans to show It's a Wonderful Life on December 18. And now we turn to the On Technology and Banking page written by Lauren Onasorge. The main headline, ACP starts eminent domain proceedings. After what it characterizes as years of failed negotiations, the Atlantic Coast Pipeline began filing condemnation complaints in North Carolina, the first eminent domain cases in the state over the 600-mile natural gas pipeline Duke Energy and Dominion Energy are trying to build. ACP filed a pair of documents December 2 to acquire North Carolina tracts in Cumberland and Nash counties through eminent domain, a last resort, ACP spokesman Aaron Ruby said in an email. Over the last 3 years, we've made every attempt to reach mutual easement agreements with landowners along the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, he said December 4, noting that the utilities have reached mutual agreements with 80% of landowners. In accordance with the law, we began proceedings in federal district courts to secure easements for a limited number of properties where we plan to begin construction next year. If it's successful in its eminent domain attempt, owners will be prohibited from earth moving or construction within the permanent easements without ACP permission. Additionally, a landowner will be prohibited from placing a structure or obstruction on the land covered by a permanent easement, including but not limited to buildings, swimming pools, sheds, concrete pads, mobile homes, trees, telephone or electric poles, water or sewer lines, or similar structures. In both the condemnation complaint and supporting memorandums, ACP points to a federal approval for the project. It also points to rules that allow utilities to forcibly acquire land for these kinds of purposes, similar to how it's done by train companies building railroad tracks and NCDOT constructing highways. But attorneys and opponents of the pipeline are quick to point out that ACP is still awaiting state approvals. Without them, the feds would rescind their permission. North Carolina regulators have repeatedly asked ACP to provide more information before they'll grant certain environmental certificates. Chuck Lawler, a Virginia attorney who represents landowners in multiple pipeline projects, including the ACP, says that instead of making it easier on the defendants, ACP went straight to federal court, where there are fewer allowances in these kinds of cases. This type of project was never ever intended by members of Congress to be able to confiscate through these easement acquisitions, he says, noting that energy needs have changed since congressional rules about acquiring land for this kind of infrastructure were passed. I'm not saying we don't need energy, but we don't need it in the way they're going about it. He says that instead of making a one-time payment for perpetual use, landowners should receive regular royalty compensations for use of their land, similar to oil and gas rights agreements. Wells Fargo names Sugg new Raleigh market president. After nearly 20 years of handling the banking needs for some of the Triangle's most influential executives, Sam Sugg says he's ready to lead Wells Fargo in Raleigh. The bank announced December 6 that it had promoted Sugg to Raleigh market president. He'll report to Mike Golden, president of the Triangle region. Sugg, a UNC Chapel Hill graduate from New Bern, has a long history at Wells Fargo. After 2 years in Whiteville, he and his wife decided to move to Raleigh. "I knew this was where we wanted to be," he says. Sugg joined Wachovia and remained through its transition to Wells Fargo. His best career move, he says, was joining what was then called private banking 19 years ago, a year after the division started. Today, the bank's wealth advisory group gives him a front seat to Triangle Growth, he says, and he'll maintain his roster of influential clients as he expands his role. "You get an opportunity to work with closely held business owners, business executives, CEOs, chairmen. You just get to learn an incredible amount from these folks," Sugg says. "A lot of these families, a lot of these corporate citizens in the Triangle are catalysts for a lot of the growth." His first step now is communicating, and doing that involves listening, he says. Jack Clayton, the retired regional president for the bank, calls Sugg an excellent choice for the job. "He's very level, very calm, very thoughtful, and he sees the big picture well and is very inclusive. Always will do the right thing for everybody," Clayton says. RDU CEO talks about raising passenger fees. Raleigh-Durham International Airport Authority CEO Mike Landguth is lobbying to raise passenger facility charges, currently capped by Congress at $4.50. RDU already pulls in about $22 million per year from the charges, which are automatically added to ticket prices by the airlines. But that money is earmarked for Terminal 2 until 2032, meaning it can't be used to pay for the massive revamp RDU is undergoing. "We can't wait until 2032 to make an investment," Landguth says. "We need to make an investment today." Should Congress approve raising the cap, RDU Airport Authority would still have to approve any proposed increases. Opponents of raising the cap fear it will result in prohibitively higher ticket prices. New investment firm emerges in downtown Raleigh. One Better Ventures, a new investment firm in Raleigh with Burt's Bees roots, is coming out of stealth mode and looking for deals. With the addition of Jim Geike, who just resigned as general manager of Burt's Bees, co-founder and partner John Replogle, another former head of Burt's Bees, says the team is ready to unveil its plans for Raleigh, the Triangle, and beyond. Two partners, Replogle and Pete Albers, both went to Seventh Generation after leaving Burt's Bees. There's also former Burt's Bees chief financial officer, Doug Hansel. and 7th Gen's former chairman Peter Graham, who are both partners in the new company. Add in directors Joe Bowman, Brian Berklick, and partner Geike, and it's the making of a dream team, Rapogl says. We want to really foster companies that are looking to do things one better than what is out there, notes Albers. It's a B Corp mantra of social investing, where the focus is on investing as a force for good, Rapogl says. Top two executives out at Cree's lighting division. On December 6, Durham-based LED manufacturer Cree confirmed two major departures in its lighting division. Daniel Castillo, president of the lighting division, is no longer with the company. Also departed is Keith Eagles, senior vice president of sales at Cree's commercial lighting business. A Cree spokeswoman confirmed the cuts but declined further comment. Both Castillo and Eagles came over from Eaton in 2016. Castillo had replaced Norbert Hiller as the top lighting executive in November 2016, as then-CEO Chuck Swoboda was planning to transition the firm into Cree 2.0, a lighting-focused company. According to Eagle's LinkedIn profile, he came over in August 2016. It's the latest big management change for Cree in 2017. Swoboda left the company in September, replaced by former Freescale Semiconductor CEO Greg Lowe. In its most recent quarter, Cree's lighting revenue was reported to be $149.7 million, down from $183.8 million a year prior. Gross profit for the unit was also down at $31.9 million compared to $49.3 million a year ago. Now we turn to Jennifer Henderson's page in the Triangle Business Journal on healthcare. The first headline: UNC Lab signs deals with New York-based biotech. New York-based Fortress Biotech has formed a new gene therapy subsidiary and inked three exclusive licensing agreements with UNC Chapel Hill. The Gene Center Therapy Center at UNC is extremely well known, says A.J. Ross, Vice President of Business Development at Fortress. There have been a number of companies in the space started out of UNC, including Bamboo Therapeutics, he notes. Bamboo was acquired by Pfizer last year in a deal worth up to $645 million. These are the first Fortress deals with UNC, confirms Dr. Shuli Kulak, Director of New Business Development for Rare Pediatric Diseases at Fortress. Fortress's new subsidiary, New York-based Tamid Bio, will focus on the development of adeno-associated virus, AAV, gene therapies for the treatment of rare orphan diseases, according to the company. AAV's use in gene therapy is particularly popular because of its lack of an ability to cause disease in humans. Tamid's licensing agreements with UNC are for three preclinical AAV gene therapies developed in the lab of Matthew Hirsch, assistant professor of ophthalmology at the Gene Therapy Center. Preclinical, as well as early clinical research, will be run out of the Gene Therapy Center. Tamid's lead program is focused on the treatment of ocular manifestations and potential blindness caused by mucopolysaccharidosis type 1, a rare metabolic disorder. While Ross declined to comment on the financial terms of the licensing agreements with UNC, he says that Fortress is hoping it is a long-term relationship with the university. Tamid marks Fortress's 11th subsidiary. Fortress develops and commercializes products through the parent company and its subsidiaries. Fortress reported a net loss attributed to common stockholders of $56.5 million, $1.39 per share, in the first 9 months of 2017. That is compared to a net loss attributable to common stockholders of $37.7 million, 94 cents per share, in the first 9 months of last year. As of September 30th, Fortress had cash equivalents and short-term investments of $154.6 million compared to $88.3 million as of December 31, 2016. New Melinta CEO says more deals could be ahead. Less than a month after Melinta completed its merger with Chapel Hill-based Sempra, the new Melinta announced it will acquire the infectious disease business of The Medicines Company in a $270 million deal. Dan Weschler, named Connecticut-based Melinta's new president and CEO at the beginning of last month, says more deals could follow suit. We can handle lots and lots of products as long as we stay in the antibiotic space. Our commercial team is very experienced, he says, adding he believes Melinta will see more business partnerships and deals coming our way. We'll make sure we make very smart decisions moving forward, he says. The medicines company deal is expected to close in the first quarter of next year. Scale to compete and moving from one product to four are important components of the medicines company deal, Weschler says. Legacy Melinta antibiotic, Paxdela, recently approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, is expected to launch early next year. And the medicines company infectious disease business includes a recently approved and launched product, Vabomere, as well as an established product, Orbactiv, and Minocin 4. Among Melinta's pipeline under development is legacy Sempra drug candidate, Clarithromycin. Late last year, the FDA did not approve clarithromycin for the treatment of bacterial pneumonia, but following the feedback from the FDA on a new safety study, Melinta is looking for sources of non-dilutive funding to push clarithromycin forward. In the remainder of 2017, he says Melinta will be continuing to prepare for the launch of Baxdela and the integration of Sempra and Melinta. And the company will also work on integration planning when it comes to the medicines company deal. Earlier this year, Sempra announced a 67% reduction in its workforce from 136 to 45 employees. Weschler says there are no plans for a workforce reduction as a result of Melinta's merger with Sempra. Massachusetts firm buys Argos' Durham facility. Cambridge, Massachusetts-based Bluebird Bio is flying south to Durham for its third U.S. site, and Eric Adams, Chief Technology and Manufacturing Officer, says the company expects to grow to about 50 people in Durham over the next couple of years. Bluebird, which is developing a pipeline of gene therapy products for the treatment of genetic diseases and cancer, has acquired the roughly 125,000-square-foot manufacturing site at 1733 T.W. Alexander Drive. According to Durham County deed records, Bluebird purchased the property for about $11.4 million. Durham's Argos Therapeutics previously planned to use the facility as its primary manufacturing facility, but after a difficult 2017, Argos announced that landlord TKC Properties of Charlotte sold the facility to a third party. Bluebird's new Durham manufacturing facility is expected to be used for clinical as well as potential commercial production. As part of our manufacturing strategy, we've been working on executing over the last year or so. We decided that we need both internal manufacturing efforts and external partnerships, Adams says. Bluebird considered Massachusetts, Maryland, and locations outside the U.S., Adams says. Ultimately, Durham provided a significant talent pool, convenient access to Cambridge, and a facility that fit their timeline. Additional factors like research talent from local universities and a rising gene therapy community also contributed to the selection of Durham. Adams says construction could begin as soon as January. The company is receiving financial support from the North Carolina Biotechnology Center's Economic Development Award Program, which committed up to $100,000 for Bluebird, meeting job creation milestones. Medical payments for a workers' comp claim down in North Carolina. Out of 18 states included in a new study from the Cambridge, Massachusetts-based Workers' Compensation Research Institute, North Carolina saw the largest decrease in medical payments per workers' compensation claim, 6% per year, from 2013 to 2015. The decrease follows little change in medical payments per workers' compensation claim in North Carolina from 2010 to 2013, and increases between 4 and 6% per year from 2004 to 2010, according to WCRI. Policy changes in recent years have targeted a key cost driver of workers' compensation claims in North Carolina, hospital costs, WCRI spokeswoman Ramona Tanabe said in a statement. Julie Henry, Vice President of Communications at the North Carolina Hospital Association, said the reductions are the result of negotiations between hospitals and the business community in 2013 and 2014 on a new fee schedule for hospitals for workers' compensation claims. Duke to open new School of Nursing building. Duke University is moving forward on a 102,000 square foot, five-story building that will house its School of Nursing, along with its School of Medicine's Doctor of Physical Therapy program and Department of Orthopedic Surgery. The new building, slated to be complete in fall 2019, received approval November 2 from Duke's Board of Trustees. The project has been in the works for about a year, says David Bowersox, Associate Dean of Finance and Administration for the School of Nursing. We have this really incredible opportunity with the Doctor of Physical Therapy program to come together and combine our resources to create the new building, says Bowersox. And it will allow the school to have all the faculty, staff, students, and PhDs under roof. Through the second, third, and fourth floors, the new building will connect to the existing School of Nursing, Christine Siegler Pearson Building, through glass walkways, Bowersox notes. And construction of the new building is expected to commence in the next several weeks, he says, beginning with the demolition of an existing 14,000 square foot, one-story facility, the Elizabeth C. Clipp Research Building. And finally, humanized mice could revolutionize medicine, says co-founder of Growing CRO in Morrisville. Morrisville-based contract research organization Burleson Research Technologies has its sights set on humanized mice and continuing a big government contract in 2018, according to President and CEO Gary Burleson. We started small and we've been very fortunate to develop the business for quite some time, Burleson says. In 1996, Burleson and his wife Florence left their positions at Procter & Gamble in Cincinnati and returned home to the Triangle to start a business. She is now Executive Vice President and Director of Laboratory Operations at BRT. BRT has grown to about 35 people and serves clients in about 13 different countries. Last month, Florence Burleson co-organized and presented at two workshops in China. Whereas many CROs focus on clinical research, BRT focuses on preclinical research prior to testing in humans. The company continues to look to new areas in the space, Gary Burleson notes. For instance, he says BRT expects that humanized mice, those that have received human cells or tissue, can be game-changing. It will be a big part of our future, he says. BRT is also about 5 years into a 10-year contract with the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences through its National Toxicology Program. The contract is approaching about 50% of BRT's pipeline, according to Burleson. It's a big part of what we do. Another growth area for the company, he says, will be BRT's ability to perform in vitro and in vivo evaluation when it comes to new antibiotics. And in turning to the On Real Estate page, written by Ben Graham, we come to this headline. Captive Heirs Luddy Plucks Large Tract of Wake Land. A prominent Raleigh businessman and conservative donor has spent the past 2 years buying up land on the outskirts of Wake Forest. A subsidiary of Captive Air, a company helmed by Bob Luddy, has paid more than $8 million dating back to February 2016 for more than 300 acres. The properties are mostly farmland and are centered around the intersection of Waite Avenue and Everett Road. The most recent acquisition was in November when the company bought 80 acres south of Old Pierce Farm Road from Richard, Sylvia, and Francis Pierce. Some of the parcels are contiguous while others are separated by one or two properties. When reached by email, Luddy said he has no current plans for the land and that the properties were purchased on opportunity. In addition to the land holdings of the Captive Air subsidiary, another two parcels totaling 38 acres were bought by Thales Academy in March and sit just across the street from some of the new holdings. Luddy started Thales Academy as a private school system in 2007. The school's website says property has been secured for a new campus in eastern Wake County, but the location had not yet been revealed. New RTP Industrial Campus changes hands for $27 million. A new industrial facility at Research Triangle Park has changed hands. Principal Real Estate Investors of Iowa purchased the 258,000-square-foot power-secure industrial campus for $27.2 million. The facility was built earlier this year. Power Secure, a product developer for utility companies, had a triple-net lease on the property and is the only tenant. The campus includes a 173,000-square-foot assembly and distribution building and an 86,000-square-foot warehouse and research and development facility. Principal real estate investors could not be reached for comment. The company purchased the property from Scannell Properties of Indiana, which acquired the land in 2016 for $1.44 million before the facility was built. The property sits on 22.6 acres at 4062 and 4068 Stirrup Creek Drive in Durham. The seller was represented by Chris Norville and Patrick Nally of Holiday Finoglio Fowler LP. Cree exec pays $6 million for Chatham County home. One of the most expensive homes ever sold in the Triangle doesn't just have an indoor saltwater swimming pool. It has a waterfall flowing into the pool and a window on the floor of the pool house terrace that looks down into a fish tank connected to the house's home theater. Greg and Diana Lowe paid $6.35 million for the behemoth estate, making it one of the most expensive homes ever sold in the Triangle region, according to Real Estate Records and the Triangle Multiple Listing Service. Greg Lowe was named president and chief executive of Cree Incorporated in September after serving as CEO of Freescale Semiconductor. The house ticks in at just under 14,000 square feet and sits on 12.5 acres along Rosemont Drive in northern Chatham County. The Lowe's new neighbors include former NBA All-Star Jerry Stackhouse, according to county records. According to the Triangle MLS database, the Rosemont Drive sale is the single largest, most expensive home sold in the Triangle. There have been larger residential land tract purchases in the area, however. Also, some high-dollar private home sales may not go through the Triangle MLS. The previous record home sale for the Triangle was a $5 million home on Oberlin Road in Raleigh that closed in February 2008, just as the economy was slipping into the Great Recession. The Lowe's new mansion has sprawling lawns with a terraced iris garden and a wildflower field. Built in 2006, the house boasts 5 bedrooms and 9 bathrooms. Molly Owen of Hodge & Cottrell Sotheby's International Realty represented the seller in the home sale, an entity called Wisteria LLC. "It's truly one of the most beautiful homes that I've seen in 21 years of selling real estate, so it was truly worthy of sale," Owen says. While the sale marks a new high point for Triangle Homes, it doesn't necessarily mean that the luxury market is tracking the same as the rest of the market. Common wisdom on residential real estate in the Triangle, that sales are up and inventory and days on market are down, doesn't fully translate to luxury homes. Houses priced at more than $700,000 tend to sit much longer with for sale signs, says Catherine Burnett, chief executive of the Triangle Real Estate Group. New owners have big plans for prime warehouse district lots. A new owner has scooped up 3 underdeveloped properties in the warehouse district and has big plans to build a large mixed-use development on the site. Gary Fields of New York City and a group of investors paid $4.7 million for the properties, purchasing them from Sperry and Otto LLC, an entity belonging to Arthur Sperry and Paul Otto. The parcels total 0.82 acres and sit just a block from the new 18-story Dillon Tower, currently under construction. "We do see this as a long-term development opportunity and are now exploring options for the property," Field says. "Those options include residential units, lodging, and office space. 2 aging office buildings currently occupy the site, each of them 2 stories tall." Field said the zoning of the neighborhood allows for up to 5 stories of development. He and his fellow investors will likely ask the city for more height and density. Current tenants in the buildings include the LGBT Center of Raleigh and Circa 1888. They both work for Sperry Specialty Advertising, which has an office in one of the buildings that was sold. And finally, in a section called He Said It, the quote, "The challenge is, how do we not lose the coolness of the warehouse district with increased density?" And that quote is from Steve Schuster, Clearscape's architect on incorporating historical structures and thoughtful design into development in downtown Raleigh. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll read the executive voice column that focuses on Tom Grieco. His title is CEO Advance Auto Parts, previous CEO of Frito-Lay. First job, Grieco began his corporate career with PepsiCo in Canada in 1986. Family, wife Corinne, sons Michael, Jarrett, and Jonathan. Age, 59. Education, Bachelor of Commerce degree from Laurentian University. MBA, Richard Ivey School of Business in London, Ontario. The headline, Grieco sees opportunity after challenging year at Advance Auto Parts. After a year and a half on the job, Advance Auto Parts CEO Tom Grieco is nearly a real Raleigh resident. This month, he moves into his newly constructed home near North Hills. For the past year, he has been commuting from Dallas, where he spent more than a decade with companies such as Frito-Lay and PepsiCo before taking the Advance Auto job in April 2016. With Advance Auto, which bases its executive team in Raleigh, the Canada native says he has unique opportunity. There's a lot to change, a lot to transform, but we have a great asset base to begin with, and I'm very confident we'll be able to improve the performance of the company over time, he says. Change is never quick, Grieco says, and recent storms haven't helped the trajectory. He says having multiple hurricanes impact the stores, employees, and customers was definitely unprecedented, he says. Companies have to rise to the occasion and make sure they're taking care of their people, he says. Advance Auto paid employees for scheduled hours, even if the hurricanes created issues that prevented them from coming to work. Grieco points to Southeast Texas, where out of 900 team members in the region, 30 had major incidents, such as the loss of a vehicle or property damage. Making the decision to pay them for time they would have worked was pretty easy, he says. It all happened months into a major streamlining effort, one that has meant more than 500 middle management job cuts in Raleigh and elsewhere. Advance Auto has had challenges. Its third quarter earnings were down 3%, the company reported November 14, and its stock price remains well below where it was at the start of the year. Grieco says he has no apologies for the actions his management team have taken to drive performance and that it doesn't lessen the company's commitment to its people. We do have waste in our system, he says. We have cost savings opportunities for the company that we've outlined. That doesn't mean that when we have people in times of need that we're going to try to pinch a penny. That's a different situation. Our people are critical. Advance Auto, which has 74,000 employees, really runs two different businesses, Grieco says. There's the retail storefront and its do-it-yourself customers, and the professional services business where parts can be delivered to professional garages. Both customer experiences will soon get easier, he says. He envisions a faster website and a frictionless experience for customers deploying both online and brick-and-mortar retail. Tech upgrades will also translate into less frustrated employees, he says. Through all of its acquisitions, Advance Auto has inherited multiple disparate technology platforms. What we're trying to do is integrate those where we can, so it's much easier for our people to find parts, he says. Today, if our people have to look up a part online, they have to go to four different online platforms to find a part. An upgrade will allow employees to see the inventory across the network. But as e-commerce giants are pressuring brick-and-mortar stores like never before, Grieco says Advance Auto is constantly evaluating its assets. He says the way Advance Auto is split up actually gives it a leg up on other retailers having to deal with e-commerce pressures. Half of the 75,000-square-foot retail store is the parts room, essentially operated as a fulfillment center. We're using stores as a distribution center as well as a retail outlet, he says. We believe we can grow rapidly, but we'll increase the sales going out the back of the store while figuring out how to strengthen the proposition in the front of the store. The current business model is difficult for online competitors to penetrate, he says, noting that Advance Auto can deliver in 15 minutes. That gives us defense against an online retailer and even Amazon Prime, Grieco says. Advance Auto's headquarters is in Roanoke, Virginia, but one of its main operations centers and nearly all members of its executive team are based at the company's campus in Raleigh. The company acquired Raleigh's General Parts International in 2014. The automotive aftermarket parts provider operates 5,100 stores, 125 WorldPack branches, and 1,300 independently owned CarQuest branded stores in North America. And now we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Bumper Crop of Stories Coat Region's Progress. As the year comes to a close, readers of this paper and our online subscribers have asked in the past about what were some of the biggest business stories of the year. We oblige by doing a special edition on top stories broken down by industry in the last issue of the year. But just like every year, there are a few stories that will not make the final cut. It does not mean the story did not have an impact on our community. It just means there were several big stories that may have had a larger impact. This year was definitely like that. We've had some monster stories that will change the landscape of the Triangle business community. From companies such as Infosys and Credit Suisse announcing some of the biggest jobs-heavy projects for our area, to UNC Healthcare and the Carolinas Healthcare System announcing a potential marriage that will operate 50 hospitals in the Carolinas with 90,000 employees, our newsroom was humming all year as we covered these stories, talked to the executives, and analyzed the impact on our business constituents. Several other stories made headlines and got people talking at after-work socials, events, and board meetings, but perhaps there was no bigger story than the euphoria after Seattle-based Amazon announced that it needs a second headquarters. With a promise of spending $5 billion and building out the project with 50,000 local jobs, almost everyone we met asked us about our chances as if we know. Even handicapping our chances seems fruitless because we really don't know the factors that will sway the company in picking a site. Is it public transportation? Is it technology workforce capability? Is it the availability of young workers who have visions of changing the world? Regardless, the story had legs, and come next year, there will be at least one big story coming out of that project if we don't make it, or several special editions from us if we do. Audience engagement is critical for us. Many think that means being active on Twitter and other social media sites. I have a different take. It's not an either-or deal. If people are reading us through our social media channels, about 20% of our audience does, it is imperative that we keep upping our social marketing game to attract a larger audience. But for the established business class, there is no substitute for one-on-one lunches, dinners, and socials. Relationships that are forged through face-to-face conversations are strong, real, and long-lasting. The more people you talk to, the more events you attend, and the more keynote presentations you hear, the more you are opening the doors to attract a new customer, recruit, or financier. And when a deal evolves, we like to play the role of the impartial communicator. So let's strengthen our relationship in the new year on any channels you prefer. And with our remaining minutes, we'll read James Lee's column in the Small Business Family Business section. James Lee is a family business speaker, advisor, and author. The headline, Meaningful Gifts This Year for Families in Business. It's that time of year when every visit from the mail carrier brings another 40 or so pounds of mail order catalogs, most of them hawking gifts for the person on your list who has everything. I don't know anyone who actually has everything, but I know some business-owning families who have a lot, and I know some who don't have much at all yet. So I've come up with a list of high-value holiday gift suggestions for all families in business. To the founder or senior owner, the rest of the family can give the gift of some extra time spent just sitting and listening to him or her ruminate about the problems and possibilities for the business. People who head family businesses carry a heap of management and leadership responsibility, but sometimes they have trouble finding sympathetic ears for their hopes and worries. Family members who work in the business hear enough about it during the workday, and those who aren't in the business won't sit still for a lot of palaver they don't understand. A couple of hours a week of interested but non-judgmental listening would be a great gift to the person who runs the family company. The spouse of the senior owner deserves an elegantly wrapped bundle of praise and gratitude for those valuable but largely unsung contributions of love, patience, and understanding that make business successes possible and setbacks easier to bear. All the special occasions that had to be postponed, the personal sacrifices that were made without complaint, and the You Can Do It Tiger pep talks represent a family business asset of inestimable worth. Give a stocking stuffed with appreciation and confidence to those members of the younger generation who have made a commitment to join the company and continue its family ownership. Many of those young people have chosen the family company over a host of attractive alternatives. They're ready to pursue a life in business that's inextricably bound up with family relationships. both good and not so good, instead of a less complicated one that leaves business at the office and family matters at home. The non-family employees of the family-owned company should get something a bit warmer than the usual frozen turkey or two-hour office party. How about a sleigh full of sincere personal thank yous for the people who make it possible for the family to stay in business? And how about putting out a special effort all year long to see that they're never made to feel like second-class people because they don't sit in the family circle? Customers, clients, vendors, and lenders should be remembered during the holiday season with gifts of gratitude for the personal and business ties that make them so important to the company. Many people do business with a family-owned company more because of their faith in the family than the quality or price of the company's products. A publicly owned corporate giant may thank its customers for helping it to make a buck, but a family business should say thanks for the friendship, trust, and support of its entire community. The rest of the family, including those that aren't involved in the business, ought to get a reflective holiday nod for being part of the culture and heritage from which the family draws its personal values and business mission. To grandfather and grandmother, who survived the voyage from the old country. To Uncle Nino, who cashed out of the stock market in July 1929. To Mom and Dad, who never preached hard work and integrity, but demonstrated those values all their lives. To the relatives who give the family and so the family business its unique, if sometimes quirky, character. To all of them should go the gifts of recognition and respect. And to all families in business, happy holidays. And we'll go ahead and stop right there, as we have run out of time for today's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.